MechCast, Thursday, April 7th, 2011. Hey, Mech Geeks, it's time for your MechCast, the show for Mech Geeks by Mech Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome to the MechCast. You know, I was going through the news feeds and getting prepped for this week's show, and you know, every once in a while I just get in this mood where I want to really talk about Mac stuff. I just want to geek out on Macs. What I'm talking about is traditional desktop notebook Macs, and a lot of the things that have been happening in the last week in terms of Mac and Apple news. We have a lot of rumors. There's a lot of speculation about what we're going to see at WWDC in terms of iOS 5 and Lion. But beyond that, there's not a lot happening right now in the news. A lot of stuff surrounding iPad sales and stuff like that. And we've covered all of that. So I was kind of thinking that stuff can wait this week. I really just want to geek out on some good Mac stuff. And so I was thinking about how we could do that. And there's not a lot of Mac news going on. So there's rumors that we might see some new MacBook Airs or an update to the MacBook Air, maybe iMacs on the horizon, something like that. But then I remembered that I had run into, at this year's Macworld, John and James from the Retro MacCast. And these guys talk about Mac history and what you can do with old Macs and stuff like that. And I had just recently repurposed, sort of dusted off my old blue and white G3. Actually, it came back from my in-laws. Well, you're going to hear about it in the episode. But I thought, what a perfect time to just talk about Macs and relive some of the old models and figure out what we can do with these systems that we have lying around. All of us, well, most of us, I think, who have been buying Macs and have had these machines for a while probably have ones in the closet or, you know, over in the corner or maybe out in the garage that they can still really serve some useful purposes. So I thought I'd get these guys on the line, talk to them, found out during the interview they have these amazing collections of Macs. You'll hear about that a little bit. And it was just a lot of fun. We had a great time sitting down for about an hour and just geeking out on Mac stuff. So I'm going to share that stuff with you today. Before we get into that, I do want to take a quick moment, thank one of our show sponsors, Furonix, makers of Deep Freeze and PowerSave Mac. You know, Deep Freeze is one of these great Mac applications. It's one of those gems that is, when you have a need for it, it is really great that it's available. What it does is it allows you to set up a Mac, put the operating system on it, load on all your applications, and then lock that configuration in place, freeze it in place, and then deploy that system out into an environment. So it's great if you're in a school institution, you need to set up a lab, and you have different users that are going to be using these systems, and you want to make sure that that original configuration stays intact, that the users can't do anything to that system to mess it up, to crash it. So this is going to save you on IT costs. It's going to avoid having to be constantly rebuilding machines or going through and cleaning off systems. But what's great about it is it does it in a very smart way. So you can freeze certain portions of the system, but you can also set up what they call thaw spaces, which allows you to define areas where your users can store and place persistent data, so files and things like that that they're going to need between classes or if they want to come back to the lab. But then you can still protect other areas of the system. And what's great is while they're using it, it also doesn't get in their way. So they can go in there, they can download stuff from the internet, they can browse around. But if, say, the browser history isn't in the defined thaw space, then the next time that machine reboots, that's completely wiped clean. The system's restored. All the applications are restored to the way that you had originally set them up. And that system's back up and running just with a simple reboot. And so you can see that's great for applications like hospitality. A lot of hotels use Deep Freeze to allow them to put systems, Macs, in the hotel rooms for their customers to use, and they know that the customer's data is going to be safe, so they can be browsing around, they can put files on there. If they forget to remove them from the system before they check out, all they have to do is reset that system before the next guest comes in, and it's like having a clean brand new Mac set up and ready to go with the applications and configurations that they had set up. So even if someone tweaked the network settings, it'll get back on the hotel network with the right configuration with a simple reboot. Really cool technology. So if you have a need for that, you should check it out. They have free demos on the website. You can get more information and details at pharonix.com. And a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. So you ready to take a little trip down Mac and Apple memory lane? I sure was, and I got my fix in today, and I hopefully this gives you your Mac fix as well. It seems like less and less these days we're talking about Mac stuff and more about iOS, but that's the direction Apple's going, and we're happy to follow along with them, but every once in a while it's good to get right back down into the Mac stuff. So here's my conversation with James and John from the Retro MacCast. Enjoy. So I guess we're going to be kind of kicking it old school on the MacCast today a little bit. I've invited a couple guys that I met actually at Macworld. I'm surprised we hadn't met before, but James and John from the Retro MacCast. Hey, James.
Hi.
How you doing? And John, you're here as well.
Hello.
Yeah. So had we not met before Macworld? I don't think we had, right?
I don't believe so. I mean, I've been there, I think, every year for quite a few years. It's just had not run into each other.
Yeah, and I think I was walking into the show floor, and I think, I can't remember if it was it you, John, who said hi or something like that?
No, you recognized us.
Oh, that's right. I probably saw your badges.
I think that's what it was. Because I don't think you recognize us by face. I think you saw the badge.
Yeah, I had known about the show for a while, which is great. I am going to mention that you guys do the Retro MacCast. I do the MacCast, and there are two shows that grew in and of themselves independently, just have very similar names.
Right, no affiliation.
Not that would be a bad thing.
We have an affiliation now.
A nice podcast. We do have an affiliation now. And it's funny because I'd been meaning to, it's like so many things in life, I'd been meaning to invite you on the MacCast, because I think the conversation that we're going to have today is a very interesting one, and one that I think a lot of Apple and Mac fans run across at some point. A lot of us have run across it many times, and that is... I have a Mac. I've just replaced it with a new one. And sort of, what do I do with this old hardware? Because one of the reasons I'm a Mac fan, and I'm assuming you guys are as well, but you can chime in on that, is that these machines, they run forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And they you develop a real attachment to the Macintoshes.
Yes.
You might even name it.
I was going to ask that. Do you guys name yours? I don't give them like personal names, but you know, they have whatever the name on the hard drive might be, I guess, kind of becomes the de facto name for me.
I have named them in the past, yes.
When you get a certain number of them, it starts to get hard to name them. So I've gone to using just the code names.
You just use the code names that Apple gives them?
Right. In development. So like Yosemite, for example, I have a Yosemite, and what is something like Kansas? You know, Kansas?
Yeah.
It's like an old 9600, I believe, is Kansas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're gonna roll out the trivia right at the front of the show. Yeah, no, I have Mac Tracker for that.
Yes.
So what did you wind up doing then with your iMac?
I'm sorry?
What did you do with your iMac then? You said you're getting ready to repurpose it.
Oh, earlier in the pre-show, I think I was saying that I had an old blue and white G3 that I repurposed. So I was just going to give that as my example. So, you know, my example of something that I did was I had this blue and white G3 I got in, 99, I think. And that was my main Mac for 3 to 4 years. And what did I upgrade to? I think I upgraded to... Was that when I upgraded to my white iBook? Actually, I probably had that blue and white even longer, because one of the great things about the blue and white G3 was that you could get processor upgrades for it. Mm-hmm. So it was a blue and white G3, I think 350 megahertz. And megahertz, right? Is that right?
That's right.
Jeez. You're talking gigahertz now. And I bought a processor upgrade, a G4 processor upgrade, upgraded it to a G4 550 at one point. Uh-huh. So it actually had a processor upgrade in it, and I continued to use that machine for a long time. I think until I got my white iBook, 14-inch iBook.
Yeah, there was a period of time when you could hold on to a Mac much longer because there was upgrade paths like the processor upgrade. We don't have that luxury anymore.
I mean, there's some upgrades and things that you can do with the pros, but I don't think in terms of the process. Well, can processor, you use the processor? Right.
I don't. Well, I think the real hackers out there probably could, but there's no like, you know,
like Sonnet
exactly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there so maybe we should talk about a little bit. Well, I guess we'll get organically probably into that part of the conversation when you're repurposing an old Mac. And another question is, how can I sort of beef it up, or what things can I do to it? And I have a number of my audience who ask me this, and I'm sure you guys get the question all the time is, you know, are there some upgrades that I can still go out and buy, or some things that I can do to kind of make it a little more useful? But and so in my specific instance, the life of this blue and white G3, I had my 14-inch iBook, and I've obviously since moved on to some other models, but it sat in my garage for a long time, and then my in-laws wanted to get a computer. And they just wanted to do web surfing and email and stuff like that. So I pulled that out and I dusted it off, and it could run all the way up to Lion on the operating system. So I forget how much RAM I had in there. It's not a ton, but I had maxed out the RAM and I had the processor upgrade in there. So threw Lion on it, and they
probably used probably Leopard,
yeah,
right?
Probably Leopard.
Oh, sorry. 10.4 Tiger. Oh.
Tiger, there you go.
Sorry, Tiger, not Leopard.
Lots of cats.
I kept saying Lion. That's not even out yet.
You're just too excited because you know it's coming out soon.
It's coming out this summer.
We'll get it on that iBet.
I got to get the right. Sorry about that. Thank you guys for correcting me. Yes, Tiger. Tigers and lions, you know, they go together.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my.
Exactly. you hit the nail on the head. So I had Tiger on it. 10.4.11, the very last version of that. And it ran great. And they wanted to do photos. So, I forget, I thrown the latest version of iLife on there that it would run, and had been using that machine up until this year when they replaced it with an iPad. So they had it running for, oh man, three, four years, and it worked great. Never broke down, never had an issue. I had upgraded I had thrown in a PCI Linksys, Wi-Fi card. For the internet access, it was a G 802.11G card.
Right.
So, I mean, you can really do, and for email and web surfing and looking at photos and the types of things that they wanted to do with it, that was perfectly fine.
Sure.
And that's why I think also they were able to replace it with an iPad, because now the iPad does all those same things in a much smaller, more portable device. And they also do a lot of traveling now. They're retired, so they go camping, and they wanted something where they could have the access to their email and websites and stuff like that on the road. And so that was a more cost-effective way for them to go, just get the 3G with some AT&T Wi-Fi access, just the $15 a month plan. And now they have internet everywhere and this nice portable little device. But that was a very useful machine. So I got it back. And I suddenly had a need recently to do some faxing.
Ah,
and so I've repurposed it as a fax server. Nice. Because it has a modem in it, and you can't even get you cannot get modems. So even though
what's a modem?
The funny thing is all the Macs have faxing built in, right? Uh-huh. So it's print and fax. So you can do a fax right from your Mac, but you need to still be able to plug that Mac into a phone line. So Apple used to, I don't even know if they sell it anymore. Do they still sell the USB modem?
I don't.
Do you guys know? So. You can probably find them though. I mean, so that's another way to go. If you need to do something like a fax server and you want to repurpose an old Mac that doesn't have a built-in modem like my blue and white did, you can probably go on eBay or Craigslist or garage sale or something like that and find one of the USB modems. But so I've hooked it back up on my network and I'm using it for that, because I went to do a fax, and I went, like a lot of people probably do, to like the UPS store, you know, the postal annex store or whatever you want. And they wanted $1.50 a page to fax. And I had to fax like a 30 page document. I was like,
yeah, it starts to get a little pricey after a while, doesn't it?
Will we ever be rid of faxing? I wonder.
I You know, it was one of those things where I do almost everything digitally with PDFs, and I like to do it that way. But this was some documents for a reimbursement for a flexible spending account, and they would only take a fax. They would not take the document as an electronic PDF for whatever reason. So, yeah, it was very frustrating. But it gave me a great opportunity to reuse this old Mac.
I'm looking at eBay right now. There's several Apple USB modems available for around $30 buy it now.
Yeah, that's not too bad. Another thing I want to ask you guys about in this conversation is how it does seem like some older Mac models, depending on which model it is, in components and accessories, like get really pricey, like the original iSight cameras. Are those still going for a pretty penny?
I think they've come down a bit because there are some better alternatives out there.
Right.
Who is it? The folks that make the snowball.
Yeah,
they've got a little Blue. Portable webcam. Yeah, Blue, right?
Yeah, and I think Logitech has a nice new HD one or something like that that's right. compatible.
So there's some other options out there, and so I don't know that the iSight is starting to lose its charm, mainly because. Well, it's runs off FireWire.
FireWire, yeah, I think it was actually just in general a better quality camera than the later USB versions.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, because it had good autofocus, it had good optics in it. I mean, I think it's a VGA resolution, so it's not mm-hmm. high res or HD or anything like that. But and then the form factor, I think people really liked. It's sort of just little lipstick style. Canister. It's a bit large now compared to some of the things that you have, but I still have mine and I still use mm-hmm. it from time to time. I'll pull it out. Because if you have something like some of the video applications will actually let you do multiple cameras if you have FireWire and USB and you can switch between them. So I've done some things with CamTwist. Mm-hmm. Are you guys familiar with that application?
No, I'm not.
Yeah, it allows you to kind of reroute video signals and stuff like that and do compositing. It's a really great free application. So I played around with CamTwist one time for doing a live install of Leopard when it came out and put that out on YouTube. And I used that extra iSight to sort of point at my screen and do some CamTwist kind of stuff with it because I didn't have a real easy way at that time or couldn't figure out a real easy way to show the screen and then myself and switch back and forth. Or maybe I did that for an iPad upgrade. It was probably more an iPad thing I was trying to live demo because we didn't have mm-hmm. video out on the iPad yet. So,
right. Yeah, the iSights, they were commanding quite a premium about a year or so ago. Selling for well over $100, but now you can get them for about half that.
For about 50, but still 50 yeah. bucks is, I mean, right. that's holding yeah. its value for a piece of technology that's as old as that is.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I should have sold all mine when I had the chance.
Well, yeah, another weird thing that you'll notice sometimes is stuff will go in cycles, where it's color classics, for a while, $150, and then for a while you could get them for around 70, and then they, for some reason, they just kind of fluctuate as to what the going price is on some of that stuff. So, doesn't mean that, at some point the iSights actually won't go back up.
I don't think so. I don't know. You think they'll be collectibles, John? Is that what you're saying?
I'm just saying, 3D stuff is in right? No, just kidding.
So I'll throw this out to you. So I've repurposed this Blue and White G3. Do you guys have older Macs that are still in dedicated service in your homes?
I have a G3 that I use for, I've got my scanner hooked up to it. So it's my scanning station. And I think my other main, and I hate to even call it an older machine, I have a G5 that I use as my video jukebox out hooked up to our TV. So those are the two old ones that I use for specific purposes.
I have some older iMacs, like all-in-one G3s uh-huh. scattered around the house. Anything from the DV on, which allows you to put airport cards in there, gives you a nice little internet terminal that you can just drop anywhere that will support the 35-pound iMac.
So you're using them as sort of internet access points throughout your house?
Right, like for
James is no more than 10 feet away from the internet at any given point.
but that's cool. I mean, because of the form factor of those units, they're kind of ideal for that. I mean, even though they're you wouldn't call them large, even though they're still a CRT, right? I mean, they're still a pretty good size for, like you said, putting in a guest bedroom or something.
Or even the G4 iMacs are good for that too.
Oh yeah, the Pixar lampshade kind of articulated lamp style.
The Luxo.
Yeah, the Luxo unit. Was that really the code name for that one?
No, I don't think so.
That was just the internet code name, or the name that the community sort of thrust upon it, right?
Code name was Tessera. I had to look that one up. I don't know what that means.
Tessera. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I don't know how Apple gets their code names. I think Intel for their chipsets uses town or city names, I believe, and mostly in like the Pacific Northwest, if I'm not mistaken. But I could be wrong.
But anyway, yeah, of course, it changes a lot if you go with an older Mac. I mean, the ones we've been talking about are fairly decent. Current. Yeah, and you can. If they're able to get on the internet, maybe not the fastest, you won't be like streaming video or anything. You get basic internet access, but of course there are a lot of Macs that came before those. And do you want to know what do you want to do with those? That's the question.
Yeah. Your old black and white Mac Plus, or even, you know, an SE, you're talking pretty limited. I mean, we've seen people do projects with them that are kind of novelty projects, like using a Mac Plus or an SE as a web server.
Yeah, that's a common one. I've seen that before, even like a Newton a message pad, like a 2100 or something like that, right?
But those people are just doing it so they can prove they can do it. You know,
that's right.
Like
yeah.
There's a lot of real need to do something like that.
Well, it's kind of cool to think about. I mean, have this technology
that's as old as it is. That is that it's cool, but you're not going to be running a business website off of.
You get geek cred, and that's about it.
That's it.
Well, so on that end, what do you guys think the oldest technology that you can be putting into service as sort of a business application? I know I'm a big fan of, and I don't know if you guys listen to NoTech. But I know for a long time he had been running a G4 file server, which is a perfect application for a G4, especially a tower where you can throw a couple drives in there and a RAID controller, and then you could really build out a pretty good server. And you don't have to have it running the fastest processor on the planet. And I think he had even installed some open source NAS software to make it network attached storage, and it worked pretty well for a while. I think they just went through an upgrade. The latest episode, they've sort of built a box from scratch, but was using a G4 for quite a while. John Foster over there.
Oh yeah. I mean, definitely web server. We talked about, kind of using, and again, G4s would be great for video jukebox. If you go any earlier than that, you like some of the G3s, I think you're probably talking more like streaming radio or music jukebox.
Right. Now, yeah. Okay, so I have to ask, video jukebox, I mean, is there really enough horsepower in there to drive video?
On a G4?
Yeah.
Yeah, on one of the towers, yeah. Yeah. Depending on, of course, what video card you have in there, too. But, yeah, I'm not talking necessarily trying to stream video over the internet, but, stuff that you already have.
But not HD, right? I mean, what kind of compressed formats are we talking about?
I haven't done any testing or anything, but I mean, I play AVIs and everything, no problem.
And kind of current stuff?
Let's see, I find an episode of like Doctor Who, which is, done in HD, that it runs just fine.
It does without, so it's a local file, you're running it. What are you using to accomplish that software wise?
VLC.
So you use VideoLAN client and just that straight up. You don't have to install Parian or any of these other tools.
No. VLC will play pretty much anything without. When you're talking Parian and stuff like that, you're talking about trying to really try to get stuff running through QuickTime.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So with VLC, I always forget because I try and stay on top of it. Is it using FFmpeg behind the scenes?
I really don't know.
A lot of that.
I don't know how the magic works. I just know it works.
Yeah, it's an awesome program.
Yeah, VLC is a must-have if you own a Mac and want to do anything with video that's beyond QuickTime formats or HD64. Yeah.
What's the processor speed on your G4 there, John?
Question. Oh yeah, I mean that's because there's the G4 runs a wide gamut. You got everything from the 450 megahertz, like the Sawtooth, all the way up to the Mirador drives or the what was the last one? Was that the Mirador? There was one other.
The Mirador was the last one.
Okay.
Mirador was last, yeah.
Okay, well, I can't tell you the speed, but I know that it runs great on a Quicksilver.
Okay, so it's around 800 to a gigahertz. It's probably got a lot of RAM, and the video card is probably pretty beefy, too.
Yeah, without actually going through the thing, I couldn't tell you.
The 867s, right, were the last ones that would run Leopard. Is that right? Or am I thinking about that right? That was like the bare minimum for Leopard.
First ones or the latest, the
very last ones of the G4 lines. Like the mirror drive door, which I think were 867 megahertz. Is that right?
I think that sounds about right.
I should just have Mac Tracker open and then I would I'm going to open it now. So we should throw that out there. I mean, if anybody doesn't know about the Mac Tracker app, if you're doing anything with older Macs and you want to get the specs and information and know what kind of upgrade options and stuff like that are available for them, it's a must-have utility. And I think they have a version for iOS as well, right?
They do.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And one of the coolest features, I don't know if it's kind of gimmicky, but I think it's cool, is that they have the startup chimes and a lot of the, on the older models, that what used to call the death chimes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually hear the sounds, those old sounds that were on all those different models.
867, you were right.
Yeah. Well, that's the speed. I don't remember what the minimum requirements for, I think that was the minimum requirements for Leopard.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, anything older than that, it has to run Tiger. And then I think you can do Leopard and then obviously Snow Leopard was G5 or better. Intel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the last of the Intel. So that's another thing. You mentioned, that the G5 is getting old in the tooth, and that's kind of difficult to say or kind of hard to think about. But
well, it comes down to the software you want to run. I mean,
exactly.
If you don't need Intel based software, G5s are plenty powerful. I was running a G5 as my primary machine until about a year and a half ago.
Yeah, so what do you guys think about this? There's a little bit of controversy because some people are complaining. I guess I've read that Lion is going to sort of kill off even doing the Rosetta stuff. Like Rosetta was an optional install in Snow Leopard, so if you wanted to run your older software that only, ran on G5 or ran on PowerPC and hadn't been converted to Intel yet, you'd have to install that to get it to run. And now with Lion, you're just going to be out of luck if you have that old software. So right. is that come up in your guys' show with your audience? Are people concerned about that?
Oh, well, not really, because we do deal with, almost all the people that listen to us have the older hardware. So if they need to run older software, they don't care. They just boot up the old hardware to run it on.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because I bring that up to people who have upgraded, and they look at me like I'm crazy sometimes. They'll go, because I get the question of, I have the software, it won't run on my new Intel system. And then I explain about the optional install in Snow Leopard, but I'm not going to have that option to give them anymore. But I also often will say exactly that. I'll say, well, did your old Mac completely die? And almost, 90% of the time, it's like, no, it's in the garage or I put it in the closet. I said, well, just get that out and just continue to use that. And they sort of look at me like, are you kidding? You mean have two Macs? I've got the new one. Why do I want the old one? And so that's what that baffles me sometimes, I do see an aversion. So maybe it's different audiences. Maybe it's because your audience loves that old gear.
I see that as a very valid excuse for keeping on another computer. So,
why do you have that old thing? I need it. I need to run the software on this. That's
the
just
only
an
thing
excuse
that can send
for
faxes.
Us.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you are going to run an old machine and you start bumping up against limits, what do you guys recommend in terms of, upgrades and finding parts and resources and stuff for that sort of thing.
Well, the cheapest upgrade to do nowadays for any of the older systems pretty much make sure you've got the RAM maxed out.
Mm-hmm.
After that, you start, even on the older stuff, you start getting into some real money, like trying to find, because of course you can't find brand new a lot of the processor upgrades anymore, so you have to resort to eBay.
Right.
And it's amazing how much some of those processor upgrades still go for on eBay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, what kinds of stuff? I honestly haven't looked. So if I had my blue and white G3 now and I hadn't done the processor upgrade and I wanted one of those, I think I have a Sonnet card in there or can't remember specifically. It's probably one of those. If I was searching for that sort of thing, I mean, how much is that kind of an upgrade gonna run me? Do you have any concept of that, or have you guys searched on that recently?
I haven't done anything. I mean, I could venture a guess. I mean, do you know if yours is upgraded to a G4? Probably not. It is?
Yeah, mine was upgraded to a G4. I took it from a. It was originally a blue and white G3 350, and then I bought the G4. 550 card for it.
The best thing to do is to go to Low End Mac and look up the model there. Mm-hmm. And they, it's a rich resource for upgrades. And so you can see what manufacturers out there have, what kind of speeds and processors they're making. But the G3, you've probably done about as much as you can do. G4s have a lot wider range of upgrades. I mean, to go to like dual processors and that sort of thing. And those dual, gigahertz plus processors, probably you're still talking hundreds of dollars.
Yeah.
So, I just looked up on eBay, and obviously it's a buy it now price, so if you did some searching.
Sure.
But here's a G4 ZIF 1 gigahertz G3 upgrade, to upgrade your G3 to a G4. It's got a buy it now price of $99.
Mm-hmm. So not too bad.
Not too bad. Not
depending on depending on what your needs are. But I would concur with you on the very first thing is make sure you've maxed out the RAM.
Mm-hmm.
Is it hard? Is there a good resource for finding RAM for those older models? Do companies like Crucial, who sell new RAM, still sell that kind of stuff?
Otherworld Computing. Yeah, it's usually that's always where I've gone to. I don't know how far back they'll go, but I'm certainly you can get something for your G3 or G4 there. But getting back to you said $99 wasn't too bad. You got to start thinking about, well, I could buy a whole other Mac with a faster processor for probably the same price.
That's a good point.
G5s are going for about $100 on eBay.
Really?
Yes.
Well, see, and that's such a great thing because, like you were saying, I mean, those are very capable machines for a lot of applications.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that would be another response for those people who have, PowerPC software that suddenly are running. You want to run Lion on their Intel Mac and then lose that capability to install Rosetta. So you could be like, well, $100 in eBay, sure. If you really have a critical application that you need to run, that wouldn't be a bad way to go.
I tell you what's a really great Mac to pick up now, and unfortunately they're still holding a little bit of their value, is the Mac Mini. Get a G4 Mac Mini, which obviously can run the older software. It's very small. And now, what do you think, John, for early G4 minis? They're under 200 now. I think you can get one for around 150 at this point.
Yeah, those are quite capable systems also, and they take up next to no space. Mm-hmm. So quiet. Lots of applications.
Yeah.
Yeah, very quiet too.
So the upgrade path, unless you it usually doesn't pay to upgrade, unless you've got an attachment to an old Mac and you want to, you want to get it up there as fast as you can. But as far as a cost-benefit analysis, I would definitely look at just picking up a newer Mac.
I've seen some extreme upgrades for the one of those models that I think has a lot of sentimental value and I've seen people do crazy stuff with is the Cube.
Oh, yeah. John just got a Cube.
Mm-hmm. Literally, just today, I just got a Cube.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Had you been searching one out for a while?
It's one that I don't have in my collection, and I ran across one with the 17-inch studio display for a buy-it-now price of, $188, so I couldn't resist.
My local Apple authorized store here in town has had one sitting on their clearance table for, I don't know how long. but I think they want $300-$400 for it. So it doesn't surprise me that it's been sitting there for a long time.
Just the cube by itself?
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, every time I go in there, it's there. It's been there years.
So they've come down quite a bit. They were doing well for many years.
Yeah.
And now you can get them kind of cheaply.
Yeah, but I think you were mentioning Otherworld Computing has some sort of extreme upgrade for the cube, don't they?
I know for a while you could even buy like a new enclosure for it.
Exactly. Yeah, you could.
Yeah, there's a lot of cube fanatics out there.
It's one of those models, and I'm assuming you guys saw this eBay listing and got some press for the 20th anniversary edition Mac.
Yes,
that went on sale for like $6,000 or something like that. Because I think it was a new one, right?
The final price, I think, was $10,000, wasn't it? I think it was $99.95. It was new in the box. It had never been powered on. It had been opened just to confirm the contents.
Right.
But there's some people are speculating that those may not be legit bids, that the price may have been artificially sent up to raise awareness for, you know, a possible follow-on auction. I don't know, but I'd be surprised if somebody actually paid that much money for one.
Yeah, that specific model, I think there's a lot of models that Apple has in their lineup, and I'd be curious to get your guys' take on this, but I've always argued that there's certain models that I call Apple's public R&D models. Mm-hmm. So they have these great ideas, or they have concepts for future Macs that they want to build, and they're sort of like production concept cars. Typically with a concept car coming out of Detroit or someplace like that, they don't actually ever make that car. They just make one or two for a trade show or something like that and show it off and be like, these are the ideas. Apple seems to put together these models, in my opinion, that are concepts, but then they sell them. And some of us who are crazy enough to love Apple and just their design and stuff like that pay a premium to get these models, and then they usually get bad reviews or people call them Apple's flops, and the cube is one of those.
A very good example of that, yeah, where I mean it was way pricey for what you were getting, but it looked so awesome.
Well, yeah, then we started getting things like convection cooling in iMacs and no fans, and I mean that model was an exercise, I think, in how much stuff can we cram into a really small enclosure and not have any fans in this thing. And I think Apple learned a lot about that. And I really think we have the Mac Mini because there was a cube. And certainly, I think we have an iMac because there was a cube, because Apple figured out a lot of these design challenges of how do we cram a lot of, and it might even be able to argue we have an iPhone and an iPad because of the engineering they had to do on that.
You know, the iMac came way before the cube though, as far as,
Right. But it was a much bigger enclosure.
Mm.
Right. So the original gumdrop iMacs were all convection cooled also.
Correct. Yeah. Well, not right at the beginning, but,
shortly after that, yeah. Yeah. You're right in terms of the timeline. But I still think that it was the combination of, okay, how can we take this concept and then really jam it into something really small? I mean, at the time, the cube was incredibly small compared to anything else that was out on the market.
Sure. And also all the lessons from the notebooks contribute a lot to the sizing, because a lot of those components were notebook components, like in the later iMacs.
Right. Right. And so then the 20th anniversary edition, I think, is you have to kind of say it might be a grandfather to the flat panel iMac models.
Sure.
You know, because it was this concept of sort of taking what Apple was doing in the notebooks and in the PowerBooks and stuff at the time, and then converting that into an all-in-one desktop sort of form factor. The 20th anniversary really just was those sort of flattening out a PowerBook and putting it on a stand. So like if you folded the screen all the way back and then just kind of put it at an angle stand to a certain degree, but then they threw a bunch of other cool stuff on top of it, you know, that Bose speaker system and the sort of pop out CD tray.
Leather wrist rests.
You know, it was really like a premium sort
of Corinthian leather,
but super pricey. Right.
Yeah, so I was trying to think what other models are like that. You mentioned the Cube, the 20th. What other ones were experimental, you think?
I think the original MacBook Air was, I mean, that was a concept.
Sure.
There was some unibody construction in there, and I think they were playing around with it, but it really turned out to sort of be sort of underpowered and overpriced. And now, but now we have the new MacBook Airs, and everybody's like gaga over them because, you know, I think Apple figured out a lot of engineering things, and they sort of had a model. I think they like to throw stuff out in the market and then see what the feedback from consumers are on some of these more experimental types of things.
Well, they are a company that, does not use, does not believe in trying to do the focus group, trying to, you know, they put out what they want to put out. There's no doubt about that. and then let the apples fall where they lie.
I guess. You mean like hockey? How long did it take them to figure out a decent mouse? Jeez Louise.
Well, do you remember the tweak they did to the they didn't change the shape,
but
they put the little divot.
Yeah, they put the bump because that mouse was so horrible. You could pick it up and it'd be totally upside down, and the bump never helped.
I remember being before the bump came out, and my parents got one of those original iMacs, and so we glued a little felt button there on the top so they could align
it.
Oh
yes,
I think some companies even made a little thing that would slide on the back.
Uh-huh.
That would turn it more into a traditional mouse shape. It was just a hunk of plastic you just kind of clipped on.
That's right.
That is right.
It came in all the different flavors, though.
The colors thing was
awesome.
Horrible.
Awesome yo-yos, if what? you got a couple of them.
Oh, you turn them into yo-yos?
I saw people that did that. So
there were light hacks to them, and people put little LCD lights inside of them to get them to light up and glow and stuff. A lot of fun things you can do with those old machines. So what do you guys think the strangest sort of repurposing or hacking of an old Mac that you've run across?
Well, I mean, you obviously have to mention the aquariums at that point.
Yeah, the Mac aquarium.
Yes. And every now and then I'll see a mailbox online.
In the wild or just online?
No, just online. I need to see... and of course, you know, the only caveat I say to anyone wanting to do that is please use a non-working for our sakes.
I saw a couch made out of 2FXs.
That's right. Nice. I remember that picture. Yeah. Not very comfortable.
The LaserWriter 2 is
wicked fast, though.
I tried to convince my wife to let me take a couple of LaserWriter 2s to make an end table on the end of our couch because they'd be perfect. They're a nice, flat, level top. All you need is a piece of glass. Stack two of them. They're perfect height. But
no dice?
She didn't go for it. I don't understand.
Doesn't she want a coffee table with lasers?
Lasers.
Yeah, there's all kinds of things that people are doing, making art out of them. You know, we've seen we interviewed somebody a few years back that had a whole art exhibit just painting the Macs in different fantastical colors.
Oh wow, I've seen jewelry out of different pieces and
people take the keyboards strip the logos off the Macs or take the keys out of the keyboards and make like cufflinks or pins or whatever.
I made the USB pen drive with the LaserWriter plastic, so kind of repurposed the badges. I always like to save the little badges, even if the rest of the system's totally shot and I've got to throw it out. I save the Apple logos for something, anything.
John's got one on his iPhone.
Yes, a nice retro color badge on my iPhone. Looks very nice.
Yeah, on my white iBook. There was a pretty easy hack, colors.
Yeah. I saw you have that. I did the same thing.
Colors.ca, which spelled with the Canadian way you spell color, it sold these little films that you could get and you just sort of popped the back case off. It was like two screws. The back case came off and you just taped in the different colors. And I had the rainbow one, classic rainbow Apple on mine. And I love that. That is one machine I wish had not the logic board died, which a lot of those met that fate, unfortunately. And I did, it's the solder point thing with the video, the graphics card, basically. Mm. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the problem, but basically the solder points, on the processor pop, they just break. And, you can sort of do this hack. I got it to come back to life briefly by you put a little shim between the top case and the logic board, and if you put enough pressure on it, there's even images of people who have clamped them to desks just permanently to get them to continue to run. But if you put enough pressure on it, it's enough to push the solder points back down so they reconnect and you can get it to boot up. But I couldn't get mine to stay on. I could get it to boot up and stay on for a few minutes, and then it would just, once it heated up and expanded a little bit, the points would come up, the contacts would come apart again, and it would just, the display dies. And unfortunately, it's the graphics chip, so you can't even do the video out. You know, it's not the key ribbon cable to the LCD or anything like that. It's really the graphics are just gone.
You can't use it like headless? Is that possible?
I don't, you know what? I haven't looked into that. That's probably worth looking into. It's funny because the other fix for it is to, you can heat the thing back up and sort of remelt the solder points back together. But the way you do that is people get a little, like a votive candle, tin, you know, just the remnant of that, and put it sort of on top of the processor, and then put some really flammable material, alcohol or something, in there and light it on fire for a while. Oh, and just heat the thing up so hot, you know, the processor so hot, because I guess it can take the heat, but then it just resolders itself. I haven't tried that hack yet. That seems a bit extreme to me. But the videos of the fix online are pretty amazing to watch. Just we'll like to, giant we'll flame coming off the top of your logic board.
That's funny.
So it sounds like, John, sounds like you're kind of the collector.
Oh, good. I mean, I'm a lightweight compared to James.
Oh, okay.
I have maybe 40 systems at this point.
We're both certifiable.
Yeah.
Or certified. Certified collectors.
James, how many do you have roughly?
I have not counted in a while.
Make me sound less crazy. Make me sound less crazy, James.
It's in the range of 180 or so.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I have pretty much every model. There's a couple that I don't have. Like, well, you know, every major case design, every major processor architecture. There's a few that I don't have. Some that were like only sold internationally, you know, that I don't have. But other than that, it's pretty complete.
Do you have a Pippin?
I do have a Pippin.
Oh. See?
That's not a Mac, but yeah, I also have a lot of interesting Apple stuff too.
Yeah, yeah. Not technically a Mac, but that's okay. That's cool.
It's related anyway.
And then I'm assuming you have one of those 20th anniversary editions?
Yes. Yeah. Other weird things like the original Apple TV, the one that was tested out in Europe for a while. It's got like the guts of like an LC in there someplace.
Yeah. It's like the black version of the LC. I had that model, but the LC model, the 575 or whatever, I think was very similar.
You're thinking of the Macintosh TV.
Oh, this is something different then.
No, the Apple had a set-top box.
Ah. Like,
it's pretty rare. And I think they were like, maybe they were test marketed in Europe.
Uh-huh.
And so I believe it's a PAL
system. Is it PAL, so it's not even NTSC?
Right. Well, you can also hook it up to a monitor.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, the standard video is PAL.
So you've had it working?
I have not been able to get the thing. All I can do, and it has no floppy. I think it was supposed to boot off of internal storage or off the network somehow. So the best I've been able to do is to get it to blink some read-write lights on an external CD-ROM.
Cool.
That's about it.
But he has it.
But I have one, yeah.
But you have one, yeah. So, okay, now the next logical question is, where do you guys store all this stuff? And I'm assuming you have if you're married, you have very understanding spouses.
Yes. We have our own personal museums. John, yours is called, the Mac Cave?
The Mac Cave, yes.
Yeah.
And it's basically, one of the guest rooms has been totally, Mac saturated. So.
Mm-hmm. Mine is called Macca. It is a spare room that's floor to ceiling shelves with the bulk of the, I think there's a lot of 120 computers in there. And then I have an office where I do most of my work, and that one, where I'm sitting now, I don't know. I haven't counted this. Probably most of the rest is in here.
And I'm assuming these two locations are documented on the Retro MacCast site.
They are. Or you can go to our Flickr site, Retro MacCasts.
Very cool. Well, since we've been talking about sort of upgrading and what to do with old Macs and stuff like that, can you guys offer some resources and some places? I know we already mentioned low-end Mac. We talked about OWC. Are there some other good resources for people who are getting into sort of collecting and restoring and repurposing old Macs that you guys would recommend?
Well, there's our website.
Yeah, of course. We'll make sure
www.retromaccast.com. There's the 68K Mac Liberation Army.
Right. MLA. 68K MLA. Uh-huh. That's a good forum, right? Mm-hmm. Let's see. What else? If you're looking for old software, if you've got an old Mac and you want to find some software, the Macintosh Garden is a great place where they put abandonware. But there's a large selection there.
Cool. What else? Is you know, I always have in the past used Accelerate Your Mac to just kind of look up technical information on older graphics cards and upgrades and things that you can actually do just to get brand names and stuff like that. It's more of a research site. I don't know how actively it is kept up these days.
I have not been to that site in a long time, but yeah, that used to be kind of the go-to site if you're going to try to hack your like your blue and white G3 or anything like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which may be why I used that site, because that was the specific model that.
Well, it was great. I think they were the first people that had a really good chart of the pinouts if you wanted to overclock your G3.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember doing that. Yeah, and they have a great archive that goes pretty far back in the line, back to like early Power Macs.
Yeah, yeah, and then of course we already mentioned Mac Tracker is a must-have just research tool. That's free. Actually, you should donate. I think it's donationware, right?
Right.
Give them a couple bucks if you use that, and I do. So, well, very cool. I wanna thank you guys for coming on and sort of taking us back into the past to some of these old models. We're gonna have to do this again, I think.
Sure.
Yeah. Anytime. Love to have you both back on and talk about maybe some of the projects, a little more history maybe. Of some of the models, which I think is exactly what people find on your show. So if they don't want to wait for that, they should definitely go check out Retro MacCast. So RetroMacCast.com is the site, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Retro MacCast on iTunes.
Right.
And then if they want to follow you guys, Twitter and all that stuff, you guys want to give out that information?
Yep. It's Retro MacCast is our Twitter handle, too.
And you both tweet on that one, or...?
I do not do much tweeting.
You're not the tweeter?
No, that's primarily me.
Well, cool. All right. Well, thanks again for coming on the MacCast, and I guess we'll get you on next time.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
So there you go, James and John from the Retro MacCast. If you want to get more of this kind of stuff, this talk about these old Macs and the code names and the different models and how they came about and the different technologies that went into building them over the years, their show is great for that. You can check it out, and I encourage you to do so. And you know, we probably should do a little bit more of this kind of stuff on the MacCast. I like a lot of this Apple history and trivia. I owned a lot of these models, as you probably did as well, and it's fun to kind of relive things like Nubus cards. Remember those? and think about this stuff. And there's some great books and stories out there too. A couple of great podcasts for sharing that stuff. The Mac Folklore Radio is great, and that's based on a lot of the stuff that Andy Hertzfeld wrote in his Revolution in the Valley book, some of the stories from there. So some of those books I've read, probably should go back and reread, and maybe we can talk about some of that stuff on future MacCasts. If you'd like to hear more of this kind of stuff, give me some feedback. Send me an email, maccast@gmail.com. But that's going to do it for today. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment, thank all of our show sponsors, Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook. You can check out their software, get more information and details, as well as trials over at circusponies.com. Smile, makers of text expander, PDF pen, disc label. Check out their stuff, as well as get trials over at smilesoftware.com. And Phoronix, deep freeze, power save Mac. Check it out. Get demos and trials over at Phoronix.com, along with more information. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the show. Big thank you to you for your support. If you want to get show notes, links to anything I talked about in this or any other episode of the MacCast, you can find those on maccast.com. Also, while you're there, be sure to check out the MacCast forum. That's at forum.maccast.com. Great place to get answers to questions about Macs and stuff like that. Stuff like, how can I repurpose my old Mac? The community over there is really great, and they offer up suggestions. Just, it's free to sign up. Go ahead and post over there. I also want to quickly remind you that I do have the membership version of the MacCast. If you want to get extra MacCast content each week for about $4 a month, right around $4 a month, depending on the plan you choose. And we've got a couple different options. You can go month to month or even sign up for a full year membership. I do extra shows each week, and those are a lot of fun. It's a lot of the tips and tricks and commentary. This week, I actually get into some of my thoughts on how Apple is winning it in the tablet market and with the iOS devices and stuff like that, some of the genesis and where I think the future might be in the movement to Lion and the sort of merging of those devices. And this is despite things like market share and the onslaught of Android operating system and new tablet devices coming in. And I think the competitors just don't get it. And in that latest episode, I go into why I think that. So if you like to hear that kind of content and would like to continue to support the MacCast a little bit more, check that out at member.maccast.com, and you can sign up there, and I certainly appreciate that. I also just appreciate you listening, staying subscribed. If you have any feedback for me, send your emails to maccast@gmail.com or call in on the listener hotline, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. You can leave your voicemails there or leave voicemail on Skype. My Skype address is the MacCast. And also, I'm trying to do some more posting on the Facebook account. I have a Facebook page for the MacCast. That's at facebook.com/themaccast. There, I try and post little interesting things I find, funny videos and what have you. And I also encourage you, that is a community site, so you can actually participate and add your own content there. Add your own photos. There's a discussion area. You can post things to the MacCast Facebook page and be part of the community there. And I'm also on Twitter, twitter.com/themaccast. So lots of ways to connect and stay in touch in between shows, and I encourage you to take advantage of those. So thanks for listening. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.